Friday on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. There are a lot of close races in our state as we get closer to November 8th, and one of them, interestingly, includes this newly drawn 8th Congressional District, where Democratic Congressman Dan Kildee is facing off against Republican challenger Paul Young in the middle of the state, sort of around Flint and some other municipalities there. This race, according to the Cook Political Report, is actually a toss-up. Paul Young is running with Donald Trump's endorsement and is prioritizing border security, preventing abortion, gun rights, parental choice in education, and reducing inflation, as well as government spending. He also worked in the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services Office under the Trump administration. Dan Kildee, on the other side, is running for his sixth term in Congress, and he has supported economic relief bills to combat COVID. He secured funding for infrastructure and blight removal, and his current district includes Flint, Bay City, and Saginaw, while this new 8th district extends west to include Midland, rural Saginaw, but loses some of the territory to the north. I'm really pleased to have Congressman Kildee here to talk about his record in Congress, what this new district presents to him in terms of challenges of representing new constituents, and what he will do if he is reelected to Congress. Congressman Kildee, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thanks, Stephen. It's good to be back.
Yes, it's great to have you here. Also, I just want to note before we talk, we were going through an exercise here at Detroit Today where we're looking back at the time that I've been hosting the show and looking at how frequently people have appeared on the show. And my memory is that you are in the top three of all the people who have been on this show. And I kept thinking that's got to be because of the Flint water crisis when we were talking to you just all the time about about what was happening. But it's great to have you here. I would also say I don't feel like you've been on maybe in the last year. I mean, it's been a long time since we've talked. So let's start with this.
I got to maintain my position.
That's right. So let's start here. Tell me about this newly drawn 8th congressional district. Why you're running in it, and what constituents will get if they return you to Congress.
Well, you know, the district to me is familiar territory because it's Flint, Genesee County area, Saginaw, Bay City, those areas I've represented for the last decade. Now, you know, most of the county of Midland, the city of Midland, and the remainder of Saginaw County, this is territory that I've known my wife, that I've grown up in, that I've spent time in. While Midland is new to this congressional district, it's far from new to me. My daughter lived there for 5 years. I spent a lot of time there. So that's a long way of saying this is really familiar territory, and the district makes sense. It's four industrial cities with unique characteristics, and I think that's where my work in this district align very closely. That the focus on those older industrial cities has been part of my career path long before I came to Congress.
Yeah.
So I continue to do that work in this role, and whether it's reducing healthcare costs or finding ways to invest in manufacturing in our part of the state, it's all the same work, and it's something that we've had some clear success with, and we want to build on that success, and that's really the reason that I'm running again, to do what I can to lower the temperature in political dialogue.
So, and
also to get the things done that we need to get done.
So talk about the most significant accomplishments of your first six terms in Congress. What have the people of Flint benefited from having you in Washington?
Well, specifically for the people of Flint, it would obviously start with the work that we did to help Flint recover from the mistakes that the state of Michigan made that caused water crisis. And I was able to work to get literally hundreds of millions of dollars back to Flint to help them recover from that. But I think the work that I'm most focused on, most proud of, is much of the recent work that Congress has been able to accomplish that I helped to write, the CHIPS and Science Act, for example. I serve on both the Ways and Means Committee and the Science Committee, and we crafted the legislation that now has incentives to build these precious, you know, microchips right here in Michigan, and we're already seeing the benefit come to this district with companies like Hemlock Semiconductor, SK Siltron, adding lots of jobs, good-paying jobs. You know, the infrastructure law, obviously, the Great Lakes protection work that we've done, you know, lots of work that I can point to in my legislation that passed the House, for example, to restore the pensions for LFI salaried retirees. Took a lot of work. We're going to get that through the Senate. That's the kind of work that I do. I advocate on behalf of the people I represent. I listen to what their needs are. I know the communities. And, you know, if I'm given the opportunity to serve another 2 years, I'll just continue to, you know, put my shoulder to the wheel and deliver for the people of this district.
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking with Congressman Dan Kildee right now. He represents Michigan's 5th Congressional District. He is running in what will be the Congressional 8th here in Michigan because of our exercise to redraw the lines every 10 years. It's a somewhat similar district, but includes some municipalities to the west that were not in that 5th district. He also has a pretty tight race on his hands, at least according to the polls. Paul Young is his challenger, is a Republican challenger, and the Cook Political Report calls the race a toss-up. If you have questions for Dan Kildee about this race or about the new Congressional 8th District, also about his record in Congress, now is the time to call and ask. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. Dan, I want to talk about inflation, of course, which is, again, on everybody's mind because it's something that we see all the time. I just told the governor in the previous segment that I stopped to get gas on the way to the studio this morning, and the pump, when I was done, said $100. Now, I drive an SUV, and maybe that's my fault, but it wasn't that much 8 months ago or a year ago. I see the same thing at the grocery store or any place that I go right now, and it's everybody experiencing this. At the national level, of course, the Inflation Reduction Act is one of the things that the president has spearheaded as a response to this. But give me just a quick rundown of what you think we ought to be doing to deal with inflation, and also whether you think inflation is a long-term issue or just a temporary issue. I mean, sometimes inflation goes up for a bit. Economic conditions change on their own and it goes back down. Is that what we're experiencing now? Or is there something fundamental that we ought to be thinking about doing differently that would bring prices down?
Well, I mean, when we think about any of the economic pressure that we face right now, inflation obviously one that we know is a problem. It's a problem for families trying to balance their budget at their kitchen table. We have to remember what we've come through in the last 2.5, you know, going on 3 years, an unprecedented global pandemic. More than 1 million Americans have been lost to it. The disruption to the global economy is dramatic. And, of course, the effect has been lots of economic pressure, supply chain disruption. The impact that that's had on inflation is very clear. You know, what we're expecting here in the United States is similar to what's being experienced. In fact, in some ways, not quite as severe as being experienced in other parts of the world. It's a global phenomenon. That doesn't alleviate the pain at that kitchen table, however. So while we might be able to explain how we are in this position, we also have to look at what we've been able to do to deal with it. You know, when President Biden came into office, you know, we had a plan, and we began to execute that plan to preserve families' losing everything that they've worked for because of the pandemic. The same with small businesses. To preserve, keep those businesses afloat, whether it's the CARES Act or the American Rescue Plan, we stepped in to help preserve what we had so that we could get through the pandemic with those folks still standing, and we did it. Well, I think what people want to know is, okay, we know how we got here. This was not a good experience for the world. What's the path forward? And mm-hmm. for me, it's focusing on what we can do to reduce costs for families. That's why the insulin cap legislation that I wrote is so important, because for about 10% of Michigan families, that's a real issue. Unfortunately, the Senate only allowed it to apply to Medicare recipients, but it's a step in the right direction so older Americans don't have to worry about not being able to afford insulin. All the things we're doing to reduce healthcare costs, reduce premium costs, to reduce the out-of-pocket expenditures for people who are on Medicare, for example, all trying to reduce costs. The same with fuel. I bucked some in my own party by saying that we should suspend the gasoline tax in concert with state taxes being delayed. It could have made a real difference in the price at the pump. I pushed the president to allow for year-round use of ethanol, a higher blend of ethanol. That reduced the price of the pump. Making sure that we use our strategic petroleum reserve, that also has made a difference. Hasn't solved the problem entirely, but what people want to know is that we hear them, we know that they're dealing with this, and we're going to do the things we can do to help bring down their costs. And we've been able to do that to an extent. We have to stick to it and get through this. And with the growth that we had, 10 million jobs since this president came into office, actually in a decent position to be able to come out of this pandemic. Recovery is still underway, and have a strong economy because we are rebuilding our manufacturing base. I mean, this is a plan that the president and Democrats in the House and Senate put together that is making a difference for Americans. We need to stick to it. And then, final point, gasoline prices drive a lot of these increased costs because it costs to move products and materials around the country. That cost is passed on to consumers. There's no justification for the pricing that the oil companies are setting. This, I mean, we know it's a global market, but the fact of the matter is oil companies are making a killing, huge profits, record profits. Mm-hmm. When we're seeing pressure at the pump, we need to go after price gouging. That's why we wrote legislation to authorize the FTC to go after price gouging in the oil and gas industry, because they're making huge profits and they're taking advantage of this moment that we're in, this economic stress that we're under, to maximize their profits. And I don't think that's defensible at all.
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. 313-577-1019. Let's go to Perry in Detroit. Perry, welcome to the show.
Yes. Can you hear me?
I sure can. Go ahead.
Yes. First of all, Stephen, thank you very much for taking my call.
Yep.
I would like to say something. This is more of a comment than a question, and it was to the governor. But first of all, let me be straightforward. I'm a supporter of the governor.
Okay.
And I would just like to say that, and of course, 2020 vision, hindsight is perfect vision. And everyone made mistakes at the beginning of this. But if you have to make a mistake, at least she erred on the side of saving lives. And as far as I'm just curious, why not just the governor, but also Mr. Kildee, why don't they push back on the other side with facts? His opponent is talking about bringing jobs, just like the governor's opponent is talking about jobs. And our state is in record low unemployment right now. They was hitting on the governor about not keeping her word on fixing the roads. I mean, you can't walk down the street now without some type of construction going on. And it just seems like the other side are good at articulating fears and falsehoods, but I haven't heard not one viable, workable solution from either Mr. Kildee's opponent or from the governor's opponent. I'm just wondering, why don't they just push back with the things that we have in place right now, as opposed to letting the other side, South Fear, and I work at a hospital, by the way, and I think the governor did an excellent job as far as her response to COVID. And as far as inflation goes, this is not unique to the United States. The planet, every industrialized country in the world is facing inflation. And as a matter of fact, the United States has some of the lowest inflation of the industrialized country. And I'm just wondering why
Perry, it's a great question. I'm glad you called and asked it. And Dan, you know, I mean, I think what Perry's thinking about here are the ads, which are nonstop right now. And I feel like this cycle, the amount of negative ads has been higher. I mean, it's just there's just a lot more of it than we normally see. And to be fair, I think most of the negative advertising seems to be coming from Republicans attacking Democrats, the governor, congressional candidates, everybody. And that's not to say that there aren't negative ads about Republicans, but I think on balance, we're seeing far more about Democrats. I think Perry's asking, why don't we see a more aggressive pushback against all of that?
Look, I understand the point, and it is frustrating because, you know, we have seen these Republican attacks, which very often are rooted in zero fact, like just confection. You know, but they come up with these attack ads because they don't have a plan of their own. I've been in Congress now for a few terms, and I've seen this under Republican leadership and Democratic leadership. When the Republicans were in charge, they talked a lot. They declared Infrastructure Week every week for 52 weeks of every year. They talked a lot. They were actually only able to do one thing, and that was to cut taxes for the richest Americans. And the biggest transfer of wealth from working people to the wealthy took place in 2017 when the Republicans were in charge. It was the only thing they ever did for the entire time that I served that the Republicans were in position of leadership. When we were able to be in a position to move our agenda, we cut costs for health care. We invested in manufacturing. We've done the things. We reformed our ocean shipping so that we don't see those empty cargo ships circling around our bays. We have taken steps, common sense gun legislation, to protect people and allow us to protect Second Amendment rights at the same time. We've moved legislation to the president's desk. The reason I say all this is that there is a difference, and we see it particularly with this version of the Republican Party. They just simply attack Democrats and have no plan of their own as to how to make health care more affordable, to reduce costs at the kitchen table, to make sure that there's a positive path forward for every kid in America, no matter where they're born. They're just really good at manufacturing outrage and criticism, but not so great when it comes to actually delivering people. You know, the way you can best judge somebody who's running for office is not on what they say, but on the track record of what they've done. And this is frustration for me because I have an opponent who's never stuck with anything in his whole life. He's not even from my district. He's never slept a night in this district until after he filed to run for office here. He qualifies himself because he's a multimillionaire from inherited money from his family business. And he just believes that entitles him to go anywhere he wants and say anything he wants about me and my record, making things up. I have to respond by running on my record. I think you judge a person running for office based on what they've done, and you can also judge partly on how they campaign. If their role in the campaign is to be nothing but willing to attack their opponent and not articulate their plan, you can bet that that's what they're going to continue to do once in office, and particularly when they're willing to lie to voters about the record, about the facts. You can expect them to continue to do the same thing if they were ever elected to public office. So, you know, the gentleman makes a very important point. But what I've decided I'm not going to do is answer every crazy attack. I'm just going to stick to my work, present my record to people. People here know me, I know them, and I think they'll make the right decision in the end.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue talking with Dan Kildee, congressman from the 5th District, about his run for the new 8th Congressional District. I want to continue to hear from you on the phones and on social. 313-577-1019 is the number here. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
WDET is your connection to what's happening in Detroit.
WDET is your place for open dialogue about the issues that impact you.
Stay in the know.
This is WDET FM,
Detroit's NPR station.
Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. We are talking to Dan Kildee. He is the current congressman from Michigan's 5th Congressional District, as running to be elected in the new 8th Congressional District because of the redraw, the every 10-year redraw we do with our political lines. We're talking to him about the case he's making to voters in advance of next Tuesday's election and what his plans would look like if he is sent back to Washington. I want to hear from you as well. What questions do you have for Dan Kildee? Do you live in this new 8th Congressional District? What are the kinds of issues that are on your mind as you think about voting next Tuesday? And what would you like to see done by the person who represents you in Washington? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. Dan, before we went into the break, you were talking about the difficulty discerning what a Republican agenda would look like for some of the problems that we've been talking about, that the candidates and the party have not been very specific about what they would do. They've just been very critical of what Democrats are doing. At the same time, the polls say that you're in a tight race with your Republican opponent. I wonder what you hear from voters about what they want from Republicans that maybe they're not getting from Democrats. Why are people gravitating toward the Republican Party, not just in the 8th District, but of course nationally everything is pretty tight as well?
Well, it is very tight. And, you know, obviously this congressional district, the reason it's tight is that it was drawn as a toss-up district. It's actually got a one-point Republican beam tilt to it, if you were to sort of look at it in the sort of pure analytics. So it's a tough race for either party because it's so evenly divided. In some ways, it's very much like the whole state of Michigan. It represents, you know, that dichotomy. You know, a good number of Democrats, a good number of Republicans, lots of independents. And, you know, I do think a race like a district like this is just always going to produce a tight race. And it's true that the midterm election is always more difficult for the party holding the White House, because I believe there's always this hope that no matter what we're doing, people think we can be doing better. And the tendency, obviously in this case for the Republicans, as we pointed out, not to offer their own plan, but to do the easiest thing to do from the cheap seats. And that's just criticize. And, you know, that when people have uncertainty in their lives and when they're concerned, you know, often that criticism, you know, catches a listening ear. And we understand that. You know, obviously, we've still got some work to do to get through some of the challenges we have. But all I ask for folks is not just listen to the noise, just look at the record. Look at what we've been able to produce in the last several months, look at the impact that it's having on your life, reducing the cost of gasoline. You know, it's still too high. We're bringing it down with some of the work the president and members of Congress have done. we are we're addressing the cost of health care for sure. Bringing new jobs back here that have been left offshore for decades. These are positive steps. Look at the facts, not just the critique. Like I said, easiest thing in the world to do is sit back and just, you know, lob critique in and never offer your own plan, never have to be held responsible for your own plan. And that's going to catch the attention of some voters. There's no question about it.
I also want to talk a little about areas where you disagree with the Democratic agenda. Recently, President Biden came out and said that he wanted to forgive a portion of people's student loans. That was something that that didn't sit well with you. Tell me why.
Well, number one, I appreciate the intent, and I can't argue with people who need relief getting relief from student debt. But I would have preferred, if we're going to take this kind of an approach and put, you know, such a huge amount of money into solving a real problem, let's get at the root of the problem. The root of the problem is that it costs too much for people who want to go to college or to any trade school. It's just too expensive. And so I'd rather spend that money reducing the cost for current and future students, and then be much more targeted in providing relief to individuals who are engaged in public service or who clearly meet a need threshold that can't really afford the debt that they're carrying. I just felt like it could have been more targeted on debt relief and then use those resources that we're putting into this to reduce the cost of education, to increase Pell Grants, for example. So my goal would have been, let's stop accruing more debt. Let's not just erase what's in the past. Let's deal with what we need to accomplish going forward, and that is creating a better pathway for more people to be able to continue their education without having to take out a lifetime mortgage to pay for it.
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Let's go to Anka in Royal Oak. Anka, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Stephen. Good morning, Dan.
Hey.
Stephen, I was, you said something earlier that riled me up, and I want to challenge you on what you said.
Okay.
Right after your introduction of Dan, you led in with a question, and you began to fall into the fallacy of a reminiscence and yearning for a pre-pandemic return. I don't know about you, but I don't recall it being rosy for most people.
You mean before 2020?
For Trump's failed economic policies and a distraction from his heinous administration's unethical abuses. We should try for a better, not the pipe dream for a return to pre-COVID days. Stop propagating this foolishness. This fits in like a shoe with the Make America Great Again. Let's make America better. George Santayana said, we will repeat history if we don't remember it truthfully and change. All right? There were plenty of problems that COVID wasn't able to address because of the panic. Now, it's like a coach telling his team, go out and play the way you did last week. All right? I like the way you played. You played good. Not taking into account that you might have lost, that it was a different day, different team, and other challenges. And then I have one thing for Dan. Dan, schools should be free, as it is in other nations. We can afford this investment in our most valuable resource, which is people.
Yeah, Anka, totally appreciate the call and the criticism and the reframing that you're suggesting there. I agree with you. We should be aiming to be better than we were pre-COVID. I do think. COVID, there's no question a worldwide pandemic was going to make things pretty awful for us in a lot of different ways. And you're right. We fall into this idea of just trying to get back to where we were. But no, you're right. We should be striving for more. But Dan, answer his question, his specific question to you.
In the first point, we do want to be better than we were before the pandemic because the pandemic revealed the many weaknesses in our society.
Absolutely.
That we had to address during the pandemic that we want to keep doing, like the reducing the cost of healthcare and, you know, insulin, for example. We saw people in the pandemic unable to afford their insulin. We're addressing that. But he's exactly right on point about higher education. We got to do everything we can to make sure that there's no financial barrier for anyone to go as far as their creative mind can take them. We get paid back for that. The whole of society gets paid back for the investment we make in opening the mind of a young person and allowing them to achieve their best version of themselves. The economic and social consequence of that is so positive that I agree we ought to make it, you know, completely affordable to anyone, even if that means we all have to chip in more.
Yeah. Dan, I want to quickly, we've got about a minute left, talk about what you expect over the next 6 days. This is a tight race. What ends up being the decider?
Well, I think it really depends on if people see themselves in the conversation and decide to vote. If we have a high, we want people to participate. Their future, their voice is their vote. That's the goal for us. But what I expect tons of dark money coming in, unaccountable money, attacking me to try to basically help a guy who's never lived here buy a seat in Congress. I believe the people of this area are going to say no to that, but we're doing everything we can in the next 6 days to communicate our message and to get people enthusiastic about casting their ballot. If we do that, I think we're going to be fine.
Okay. Dan Kildee, congressman from Michigan's 5th District, candidate for Michigan's new 8th District. Great to have you here with us on Detroit Today. Thanks so much for joining.
Thank you.
All right. Note, Dan Kildee's opponent, Paul Young, we've reached out to him, get him to come in and talk to us about his candidacy. We have not gotten an acceptance to that invitation quite yet, but still hoping for that as well. Come back tomorrow. We're going to talk about inflation, why it's persisted, what's causing it, and whether it can be lowered without causing a lot of harm to the working class. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.